So welcome everybody. Again, this is our MCO calls for May 13th. We're joined by Amerigroup here today. I'm going to go over a few things that we have usually, or that I, how I usually start my calls, talking about informational letters that have been released, just to briefly give everyone an update in case someone was not on our 10:30 call. The first one I'm going to talk about, and I don't know if you can see this or not, is information letter 2128, managed care. This is on incident reporting, and it's ensuring that providers know that this applies to HCBS waivers as well. They need to have incident reports completed when there are major incidents. And this is supposed to be provided or submitted regardless of whether direct services were being provided at the time of the incident. So just making sure that providers are aware that these incident reports need to be submitted and completed for HCBS waiver providers as well. The next information letter I wanted to talk about was 2129. This is about prior authorizations and claims filing extensions for managed care. As I kind of talked about earlier, the prior authorization extensions is not necessarily for our provider groups. This is mostly going to be extending like one-time services that may have are impacted because of, I guess, for example, the halt of elective surgeries that may have had an authorization in place that would then require those services to be provided at a later date. That's just one example. It's not going to be a continuity of care or a waiver of new authorizations for our groups, unfortunately, but it's more so for those one-time services that were affected by COVID-19. The second part of that is a claims filing extension for managed care. Starting April 1st, you got an extra 90 days to submit your initial claims. That had been 180 days. During the emergency, it will be for 270 days. And I think that they're going to be evaluating that in 90-day increments. And then the third informational letter. I'm hoping that this is, hopefully you're able to see some of this. So this is 2133. It's the civil money penalty grants for communicative technology during COVID-19. This is a pretty extensive informational letter. There's four pages to it, but it provides all the guidance that you should need when filing to receive some of these funds. Again, this is being done because of the visitor restrictions as set forth by CMS. And so this is a way to allow for your residents, nursing home residents, to be able to continue to communicate with family, especially during this time, since it's hard to not be able to see your family members. So this grant, you can submit one per facility. So make sure that you are submitting for everything that you would need. You will not be able to submit a second grant application. You are required to use this link and this template to submit an application. If you've submitted one before, you're going to need to redo it again on this actual template and application. Up to $3,000 per facility. It talks about some allowable devices that you can acquire and allowable accessories, and then obviously some prohibited items as well. Questions can go to imecmp@dhs.state.ia.us. And then there's just additional information on how those payments will be dispersed as well. But again, this is information letter 2133. It's on DHS's website, easily found by just going to your search engine and typing Iowa Medicaid informational letters, and you can get those out there. That's pretty much it as far as informational letters go from our last call. So I'm going to turn it over to John. If you guys have any updates that you'd like to talk about that has been going on with Amerigroup for the last month, if you wouldn't mind, if you have anything, I guess.
I'm just going to check. Am I unmuted, Brandon?
You are.
I'm just confirming here the Amerigroup participation, and we do have Julie Stuhr from Provider Solutions and Daniel Kratis from Provider Solutions joining us today in addition to myself. So, yeah, and thanks for reviewing the information letters and some of the work that is coming out of DHS and IME. I want to start off with an overview of the COVID response that Amerigroup is implementing here, and just give a sort of a high level overview, some of the things that are, you know, relevant to some of your members more than others. Good to hear nonetheless. The state and Iowa Total Care and Iowa Medicaid Enterprise and Amerigroup work collaboratively in working within the context of changes in the Medicaid program that are both coming federally from Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services as well as generated locally. Iowa Medicaid Enterprise did submit 3 state plan waivers that are in, you know, various different phases of approval and implementation. Some of them are expansion of certain services to populations not receiving them now. Some of them are relaxations of some regulations or extensions of membership in the Medicaid program for individuals who might have otherwise left the program for various reasons at the end of the month, sort of a continuous enrollment process, and several other things. Within the context of extended benefits, there's a new home delivered meals benefit being extended beyond the 2 waiver HCBS waivers that already had it built in. It's now extended to all of the HCBS waivers, as well as Medicaid members who are considered homebound in all of the other benefit programs. We've seen a significant uptick, an average of 600 to 1,000 additional home delivered meal orders per day just within the context of Medicaid, of Amerigroup. And we track and report those numbers to Director Randall and his team so that they have a good sense of how that is going as well. Expansion of services also has extended to homemaker and companion services to populations that are considered homebound outside of the several home and community-based service waivers to other homebound individuals on other benefit programs within the Medicaid program. I think that's significant for folks to know. If you've got, you know, home health services going in and out of a member's home, there may be some additional services that go along that would be beneficial for the members that you're serving. We're tracking the virus and its incidence within the context of our membership in collaboration with providers and trade associations, for example, for home and community-based service providers. The Iowa Association of Community Providers is maintaining a list of 38 member organizations that have reported positive cases, and that is 261 individuals in 161 locations. I'll get into the nursing facility ones in a little bit, but I did want to quickly highlight a couple of other items that, you know, that all payers and outside entities are doing their best to shoulder the burden of trying to find more PPE for systems, for health systems, for individual clinics, for provider associations, and so forth. We are as well. We'll be continuing to provide updates on that when we're able to get shipments and move them over. Our Amerigroup Iowa is maintaining our pre-pandemic turnaround times for authorization requests for inpatient, outpatient, LTSS, and behavioral health services. We track those daily and report them to Director Randall daily, as he has been tracking turnaround times and prior authorizations in particular very closely to make recommendations for program adjustments if there appears to be an overwhelming of certain parts of those systems. I mentioned that disenrollment is suspended. That's going to be evaluated every 90 days on 90-day blocks. So the first one is the March-May block, which means there'll be a reevaluation at the end of this month for June moving forward. Amerigroup, like most of the other organizations that work directly with members, have suspended face-to-face services, and that will be evaluated based on safety and health considerations separately from whatever might happen with the executive orders. So our LTSS team in particular is utilizing telephone and video conferencing technology to have direct conversations with members in all settings. And when assessments, the regular assessments are annually come up, we're conducting it, those by telephone where possible, by video conferencing in other areas. And just one other items before I go into the sort of the breakdown on our nursing facility tracking, and that is that Anthem, Amerigroup Iowa is a part of the Anthem parent company. Anthem has a foundation. Our foundation has engaged in a number of different activities that are COVID response related across all of the Medicaid states that fall under Anthem. And for Amerigroup Iowa, our foundation has donated significantly to Iowa food banks. We have planned distribution of communication technology targeting vulnerable groups such as youth aging out of foster care systems and into independent adult living. And we are partnering significantly with the community action agencies to make referrals to members who are in crisis that need services like WIC, LIHEAP, weatherization, assistance with housing and rent, and so forth, that go beyond the Medicaid program to prevent food insecurity and do some homelessness diversion, which is something that is spiking along with the incidence of the virus. So a number of different things going on there. Again, I did want to jump into a little bit more about the tracking within facility-based care. We have a daily, Amerigroup has a daily protocol on nursing facilities where our community-based case managers have been doing outreach calls and trying to detect the degree to which Amerigroup members are contracting the virus and then staffing case management through the process if hospitalization has occurred, and following through outpatient case management protocols that we've developed for our outpatient programs. We're tracking 34 nursing facilities in the state that have Amerigroup members that have tested positive. That is a sort of a sum rolling total. 14 of them have reported no change in the last, what would be since last Friday when this report was last generated. The next report will be generated next Friday, this Friday rather. Updated reports in 20 nursing facilities where there was at least one additional or new member resident testing positive. We are tracking them by facility name, city, county, the date that the positive was detected and whether or not hospitalization has occurred. We report that just as Iowa Total Care does similarly. We report that information on Tuesdays and on Fridays directly to Director Randall. That may be moving to just a weekly report. It is a part of the overall tracking for COVID incidences within nursing facilities. I know that the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals, the Department of Public Health, Iowa Healthcare Association, and Leading Aid are also partnering very closely with IME and DHS in tracking this. As we know, it's a known vulnerability within the entire system and the most vulnerable population. So that's the role that we're playing in that context. I'm going to pause there and just see if Julie has an update. It doesn't sound like it. Danielle, do you have an update today?
No, nothing today.
Very good. Thank you. That is our opening update, Brandon. We can go to questions now if you'd like.
Thanks, John. And we only had a couple, but they are a big couple, I suppose. The first one is on nursing facility rebase. We had seen some pretty good movement. I want to say it wasn't this last week, but it was maybe the week before, where providers were starting to see several or quite a few claims begin to reprocess. A sample that I have taken of some members seems to indicate that that's probably about 60 to upwards of maybe 70% on average of the claims being reprocessed, leaving still an extra between 30 and 40% that have not been reprocessed yet. And again, this is based off of the sample that I had. Again, but it's pretty significant, probably 30, 35% of facilities. So, of course, when you do that, there's some providers who've received very little, less than 10%, but then there's also some providers who've received all of their retroactive rebates. So I didn't know if you had any comments on providers on, you know, when the remainder of the claims will be reprocessed by Amerigroup.
The project was completed at the end of April. There are a few sort of expanding bullets I want to share with the group today. We have done a significant amount of analysis on the claims reprocessing, both paying at rate and enhanced rate over the July 2019 through March 2020 period to end of March 2020 period. And we have been able to track exactly how much has been able to pay per facility at the base rate and at the enhanced rate and the difference based on the claims level information. That information has been provided to the IME because Director Randall has asked to be directly involved with that. There are providers that need to submit corrected claims but have not. And in those cases, our provider solutions teams knows exactly what building and what claims have are needed to be submitted for reprocessing. And Julie and her team are proactively reaching out to those facilities and requesting that those claims get submitted so that the correction can be made.
And I appreciate the response, John. What would be the response for facilities who do not need to submit corrected claims but still have amounts remaining that are owed to them?
Hey, Brandon, this is Julie.
Yep.
I finally figured out my audio. Sorry.
We're glad to have you.
Thank you. I reach out to the local rep because, as John said, they have the master spreadsheet that shows what you know, they can pull up very quickly the provider in question if they're on the spreadsheet and what the payment was. So if they weren't on the spreadsheet, then that's an avenue, obviously, but the local rep would have all that information, and that's the place to go.
Okay. And so, I guess as far as Amerigroup knows currently, any claim that was a good claim or that the provider had billed in excess of their new rate should have been paid out already.
Yes. We did a huge sweep, not to say, you know, something didn't get missed, but yes, we believe that we have taken care of the large majority. And again, there's quite a few that we could not do because they didn't bill enough that all require corrected claims. So I would just have the providers reach out to clarify what bucket they fell into or if they're not in one of those two buckets.
Okay. So I'll just reiterate to the providers on the call. If your initial claim submission billed amount was not higher than your new Medicaid rate, you will need to submit corrected claims for all of those dates of service that applies to. If you did submit your initial claim at an amount that is above what your new Medicaid rate is back to July of 19, and you still have amounts that are outstanding, you need to reach out to your provider relations consultant with Amerigroup to determine why you still have a remaining amount outstanding. Does that sound accurate?
That's the correct process.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. The second question that we had submitted ahead of time is for our home health members. Beginning April 1st, Amerigroup process for indicating not homebound status was changed. Providers were able to indicate as a secondary diagnosis the code Z76.89. This process was supposed to allow for claims to process without needing a Medicare EOB because of not homebound status. So we have obviously had a claims run since then. Providers have submitted claims, and a lot of providers have seen denials for large percentages of their claims from Amerigroup. I know that we have talked to Danielle some about this, and so just wanting to know, or if we could have an update for the callers on this call of what's the process and what we're looking at doing on fixing some of this going forward.
So the Z code is currently allowed in the second position, and we are working to update the programming for the Z code in any position. In the meantime, we are sweeping and proactively reprocessing claims if they denied based on the Z code being a diagnosis position on that claim.
Okay. I know that, so there, anyone who's received a denial for a Medicare EOB or requesting a EOB from a primary payer that have the Z code as a secondary diagnosis will have those claims reprocessed by Amerigroup without intervention from the providers until an edit is placed in the system, final edit is placed in the system, allowing it to be used in any secondary position. Is that right?
That is the information that I have.
Okay. And then I know that some providers have been working with you, Danielle, at this time. Do you know, I think they've been possibly submitting spreadsheets or something like that to you. Should that stop then, I suppose, at this point? Or what kind of feedback do you have on that?
I would say it's up to the provider. I don't, whatever they choose. If they choose to wait for the sweeps, that's fine with me. But if not, if they do not want to wait for the sweeps and they think that I can get it done faster, sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. I leave it up to them to make the decision. Anything that I already have, I'm going to continue to work and submit so they don't have to worry about that. But if they want to continue to, work through me, that is their choice, and I'm fine with it at this point.
Do we have any kind of indication of what a timeline will be for the claims that are going to be caught up, like in a sweep, or like how long it will take those claims to end up reprocessing?
We do not have a timeline on this project.
Okay.
Hey, Brandon, this is Julie. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead, Julie.
Thank you. Is it my understanding that the claim sweep for this particular problem will be done every week, and that you guys will then fix that on your own, correct? Is this a weekly sweep?
I have not heard the term weekly along with the term sweep internally.
And we may have information on that. Was it weekly?
Well, it just said that they're going to identify any denials on a weekly basis and reprocess those claims without intervention from the providers until the edit is finalized in the system. Obviously, if it's caught up in some kind of a sweep of some sort, I suppose, that doesn't necessarily mean that they will, be paying right away. There would probably be a lag time in the identification of the claims that have been denied improperly, and then the reprocessing of those claims at a future date would be my indication or my thought on that, on how that would be handled.
Okay, and I there's several comments regarding this particular piece. So I will just say, for some of the comments coming through, it was clearly communicated to Amerigroup that this particular code could not be in the second position. It could not appear before code number 7 because 2 through 6 are used for risk adjustment. So we did flag that early on for them. So we understand that you do not want that code in position 1 through 6, and for that reason, and that was relayed on before the edit was even put in. So they are now working to get that fixed to any position as we ask.
Thanks, Julie. That's all that we had submitted ahead of time. Obviously, we've been having a lot of questions come in through the chat now, so we can all obviously see the chat. So I'm going to go through some of those questions with you guys now, John, Julie, and Danielle, if that's all right. I'm going to start. We've answered some of them at the beginning. I'm going to go into one that says a provider has received denials for reason code 16. I'm not sure what that means, but I guess the question is, what would allow or what would require some kind of issue to be showing up on the system's configuration log?
I have a question. For the 16, what is the actual, besides the code, do they know the reason it's denied?
Yeah, Angie, can you put the reason of what that is, and then I'll come back to that here in a little bit. I should say that this EOB problem, although it is definitely a problem for our home health providers, there are several nursing facility claims that continue to get this denial as well. They obviously don't have a code that they put on their claim to show that it doesn't need to be billed to Medicare, because the MCO is the primary payer for the room and board services of the nursing home claims. So there have been continued to be problems with requests for Medicare EOBs on nursing home room and board claims too. Not to the percentages of our home health members, for sure, especially not this month, but it continues to be a lingering issue. Is there any feedback on those providers or what they should maybe be doing differently?
If you're talking just the EOB denial on standard nursing facility claims?
Yep.
No, there's nothing the provider can do differently. That just falls into that general margin of error on occasion. It should be fairly simple to appeal and get overturned, though.
So I have a question in here about community-based case managers. We're supposed to notify the CBCM when there are any changes regarding condition or services, hospitalizations, discharges, hospice, falls, member deaths, other relevant info. It's important to keep the case manager informed on past our level changes and any positive MDS section Q indicating desire for discharge so that you can assist members if needed. This seems to be a duplication of information that is submitted through Ascend and Path Tracker and PASSAR that gets updated to DHS directly. Do you guys receive this information via electronic file share from the department, the PASSAR and Path Tracker information? Basically, if we're reporting it through Path Tracker and PASSAR, and then we're having to submit it to the CBCM, we feel like we're doing the same thing twice. And so wondering if any of that information comes over directly from the department. Any thoughts on that?
I don't know that we have anyone on the call today, Brandon, that can answer that question. This is Julie.
Yeah. Okay. I guess it may be worth looking into to see if some of that information is already obtained through the department on the residents or tenants, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll take that question back. Our concern is that waiting a process of a report being submitted to the department and the department electronically sharing that information may not meet our contact protocol and discharge planning that we're held accountable to. So we're going to have to get a LTSS SME involved with answering that question.
Okay. Another one that we have is sometimes providers receive authorization approvals or denials via fax. Sometimes they don't. Is there a way to indicate that we want them to send to us via fax only, or when we do receive them in the mail, we oftentimes get multiple copies mailed to us? Something I wonder is why remits seem to not be in any sort of order. This may be a second question. First one is there a way to indicate via fax that you want your auth sent via fax only? Or I guess what's the process on submitting approved authorizations to providers?
Sorry, it's crickets. I don't want to speak out of turn. We'll go back and ask Donna for sure.
Okay. I knew that Donna was wrong. So
I'm here. I have an opinion. Donna's here. Hello. Oh.
Hey, Donna.
Yeah, I was trying to get off on you. Sorry. Yeah. So with authorizations, we send a fax notification for those that are medically reviewed. And then the letters are automatically generated when we put it into complete status. So we cannot suppress a letter from being sent. I wish we could. We are working on a process, though, to have more than, to have up to 10 services with the same provider included into one letter. So that we've been working on that for a while. Hopefully it's getting close to production. I can't answer the EOB question, though.
Okay. Yeah, someone's asking.
And Amber, I'm still working on your project.
Why? Sorry. No, that's right. Why remittances seem to be in no sort of order, not alphabetically or by member number. Just curious as to how they're listed on the remits. I guess, is there any feedback on, I'm sure there's some kind of process, I suppose. I guess I don't necessarily know what that is.
I think we've had this question before, and we don't have a great answer. That's just the way they're generated. You know, it comes out of the system that way.
Mm-hmm. This is in regards to nursing facility pass-through room and board updated rates. They have submitted corrected claims with the updated increased rates, and they're receiving denials for a myriad of reasons, duplicate out-of-network, et cetera. Is there anything on the hospice room and board pass-through side for people who are submitting corrected claims on how to get those claims to process accurately and not deny?
Unfortunately, I don't think the providers are doing anything incorrect. It's just a manual process that we're working on internally at Amerigroup. So they're, you know, I mean, continue to do what they're doing. Once again, if they do have a denials, if they prefer to dispute them themselves, they can. If, you know what I mean, if not, you know what I mean, they can send them over to me.
Okay. Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you.
This one looks like a longer one. There's still numerous claims that were adjusted where the adjusted claim did not deduct the CP. Last call, Amerigroup said that they'd automatically be corrected. This provider hasn't seen any of those and still have many credits out there for CP that was not deducted. Is this among any corrections that are being completed automatically by Amerigroup? Or how would a provider indicate that, or should they indicate that to Amerigroup?
I believe that was taken into account with this final sweep was supposed to have been like a kind of a net thing. Again, without specifics, I would just contact the local rep and we can compare amounts on what was received or what should have been received. We'll have to look at that by provider.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This provider submitted corrected claims for the new rates back to July. They've received some random payments since the end of March. Some of these include takebacks of the previous payment, many paid without taking the previous payment amount back. So some providers have been overpaid without a recoupment at all. So is there any kind of, I mean, I think this is pretty much the same question as the first one about some people are getting paid back, and obviously we don't want to be overpaid, we don't want to be underpaid, we just want to be paid correctly. So in the case of an overpayment, how should they send that back? And it's hard, I'll say, because they don't really want to send a refund check back, because there's been instances in the past where you submit a refund and then it's automatically recouped and then you're out your entire payment, and then it's just a very difficult situation to get that claim paid again. So obviously it would ideally that's recouped automatically from a future payment, but didn't know how Amerigroup wanted that to be handled, any of these takebacks, I suppose.
I mean, I think for the claims that are overpaid and they know that they are overpaid, they can, you know what I mean, let me send those to me, only because Amerigroup will identify the problem that, you know, I mean, there is an overpayment, but most likely it will be taken back in future claims. So if you don't want that to happen, you know, let's be proactive and you can send them over.
I think they probably do want it to happen, or they do want it to be deducted from future claims. I think it's just notifying Amerigroup that they overpaid on somebody, so then they can take that amount back. But I think there's just, they want them to only take that amount back. They don't want them to take the entire claim back, you know, just the amount that was incorrectly paid.
And Danielle, I would say, I mean, it doesn't really need to go to you. There is a form on our website that allows for, let's see, it's called a recoupment notice form, I think is the out if you just want to have that taken out of future claims.
Okay.
There's a refund form if you want to send a check. And I understand what you're saying, Brandon, that a lot of it's timing. So like if you can send the check right away, usually that will help the double clip, but there is a form that you can fill out to just say, you know, you overpaid me so many dollars on these claims. I'm giving you permission to offset that on future claims.
Okay, thanks.
So I'm flipping through the questions here. We have a lot of them, but I think we're addressing a lot of these same questions throughout our discussion here. So one question is, why was the switch made to using a diagnosis code versus a remark code? I'll say because the DX code was supposed to automate the process, thus reducing the denials for needing an EOB. I think that having the in the remarks for some kind of a manual process where the DX code would automate it and hopefully increase the accuracy of the processing. Obviously, we did not see that this month, but the hope is that in the future that we will start to see fewer of those, because there were a lot of providers who were having issues getting denials for having the XB not homebound in remarks. I don't know if there's any comment from Amerigroup on that at all either.
I'm sorry. So I guess they were kind of just expressing a point more than a question.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And there's questions about whether it needs to be in the second or the seventh. Obviously, Julie's talked about this a little bit. Julie from IHCA, second position is not. I think that's maybe how the system was set up, but that's not necessarily feasible for home health providers. So Amerigroup is currently working on allowing that to be placed in any secondary position. I think Donna responded to Amber. If a provider has claims that were rejected for an invalid NPI, who should they contact about recredentialing or rejected for invalid NPI? And does it need to be recredentialed, or I assume it would probably be some kind of a verification of the NPI in Amerigroup system for the provider? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Contact the provider rep, please.
Yes.
Okay.
It could be a couple things, whether we don't have a rate from IME, we don't have that NPI registered, but go to your provider rep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that would have been a new facility or anything like that. I'm not sure. Krista, maybe you can shed a little bit more light on that. Not sure what this question is. When did the requirement change that recertification visits are not required for non-skilled services? This has been getting paid from Amerigroup and all the other MCOs and traditional Medicaid, but we received a denial last month on an Amerigroup prior auth. I don't know if Danielle, if you have received a message from anyone on these recertification visits for non-skilled services?
Not that I can, think off the top of my head. There could be an email out there that I need to review, but they can send an email.
Okay.
And yes.
Amber, I'd probably just reach back out to Danielle on that one again.
I think I remember her email, yes.
This is a comment on EOB denials. While it may fall under the general margin of error, it's still a burden to submit a dispute timely then, and then an appeal. It's just, there's really no rhyme or reason to it, I suppose, where it can be applied to someone for 1 month and then it's not applying to a person for the next month. Especially if you're billing for multiple facilities, it's not usually just one, it's 40 that you're doing. So it just doesn't make sense. We can't be satisfied with this as the solution. It should be known issue that is worked and reworked for each time it comes up. It has been in the past. Why can't it be reworked anymore? This is on EOB requests or denials for nursing facility claims, and why they can't be continued to be reworked without having to go through the dispute and appeals process.
Because that's just the normal process for general errors. Like, there's always going to be some general fallout or mistakes, and that's our process. You can imagine provider relations can't escalate every single claim for every provider. I mean, that it's faster to appeal it yourself, actually, most of the time. I get they're frustrating, but some of that is just normal fallout.
Who is the new, is there a new provider rep in Northwest Iowa right now? Is it Chance?
Yes.
Okay. And then Chance's information would be on Amerigroup's website under their provider relations consultants tab. There's contact information for all the provider reps on that website.
Yes, and Chance is on the, there's a different maps for different types of services, but he is listed on the BH and LTSS web, our map. Megan would have been on the general medical map.
Okay. There's a request for Danielle to put some contact information in the chat.
I did.
Okay, perfect. I haven't
Thank
got
you.
Yet. So thanks, mm-hmm. Danielle. We do have some nursing facility claims denying for timely filing on the rebase claims, which wouldn't be accurate since the new rates just came out in January, so we wouldn't be at a timely filing yet since it's a correction. Are those being automatically reprocessed by Amerigroup then, or how are those errors being identified and fixed?
Sorry, Brandon, which question are you on?
Sorry, it's one that was submitted to me privately, but they're basically saying we had corrected claims submitted and then denied for timely filing. Does a provider have to dispute that, even though it shouldn't have denied for timely filing? Or how?
No,
what should be the process?
Yeah. Corrected claims that are denied for timely filing, those you can take to your provider rep, because you're right, those you won't get a different outcome if you appeal those. So any nurse, like if you have corrected claims, nursing facility, related to these late rate updates and stuff, those you can go directly to your rep.
A question about when a recoupment will happen. A provider has some overpayments. They also have an HMS audit requesting a refund of a duplicate amount from Amerigroup, is there a date that it'll be recouped, or should they be sending that back through the HMS audit? They just don't want it to be taken back on both, I think, is the issue.
Yeah, I can't really answer without knowing specifics.
Right. I suppose if it goes back on the audit, then the audit, it can be proved that it was submitted back on the audit, and then...
Yeah. I mean, generally, we usually work together on those, but...
I'm sorry, I'm still flipping through the questions. We had several of them. Why can't the overpayment be submitted to the dispute option on the website? That's one question.
It's a different department. It's just not a function of the dispute process.
Okay. Some comments. And this is a response from the NPI problem. I don't know that it's a recredentialing thing. It looks like it's a facility that's been paid from Amerigroup for the last 4 years. So that just seems, I don't know why that denial would happen, but I would definitely reach out to your rep, Krista, like it looks like you did. The question about the recoupment form, does that mean that the project that was supposed to be recouping some of these funds last month is not happening anymore, or what's the best way to go about it? Should they do the form, or should they wait for a recoupment project from Amerigroup?
If we're talking nursing home claims, nursing facility claims,
yep, I would
clarify with the provider rep before you do anything. Because yes, it's my understanding though that was all supposed to be taken care of in this one large project. So before you go into any additional work, double check with the provider rep.
Okay. We have a question about, is the reason code, so this is going back to the home health Z76.89 providers who have that, is the reason code that they're being denied for 16?
That's the primary care EOB, yes.
That is, so that's what
yes.
That is. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. And then a comment about the refund notification form taking a long time to initiate a refund for future claims. Submitted in January 2020 for hospice, and they're waiting for funds to be recouped, and there are plenty of claims to be recouped from on the MPIs they submitted for, so... It looks like it may take a long time if they use the recoupment form on their website.
Brandon, I'm going to have to drop. I have to be another meeting at 12:30.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
This question is, what position is the DX code, second or seventh?
As of now, second.
Yeah, well,
Brandon, this is Julie. Let me see if I can clarify it for all.
Okay, that's fine.
Is that okay?
Yeah,
so
for home health,
positions 1 through 6 on your
1 through 7, isn't it?
1 through 6, beginning at 7 is where you could start putting a code that wouldn't get caught up in payment or risk audit. So you have your primary diagnosis, and then 2 through 6 are what they set aside for what we call risk adjustment, meaning that plays into your 5-star ratings that CMS puts out every quarter. So you do not want a non-diagnosis code between 1 and 6. So how Amerigroup configured this new audit to work so that it did not have to go in the comment box, and there did not have to be intervention and have a hand touch to all these, was they put it, that they wanted the code put in position two. And when we worked with management, we told them right away, position two through six is for risk adjustment and affects provider star rating. So you would not want it anywhere in position two through six. So they have gone back to make it so that their system can read it in any position. And there would be, I suppose, a select few that may only have two, three, four, five, or six diagnoses total. I would guess the majority have many more than that now that you guys are going to get paid under the new PDGM system for comorbidities. So, but just know that position two, three, four, five, and six are risk adjusted by CMS, and that gives you your star rating. So you do not want a non-diagnosis code there.
Non-clinical diagnosis code there, yeah.
Correct. Did I say that?
Yeah, no, that's
okay, Brandon.
Yeah, that's accurate. And I think what Danielle was saying is that basically that the system is configured in spot two, which obviously those are two very contradicting statements, Julie, and what Danielle had mentioned, but they are working on allowing for this to be placed as any secondary diagnosis. And as Julie had mentioned, because of PDGM and being paid for diagnoses for all clinical and payment diagnoses, I think the ideal spot for this would be at the end of all of those, as long as the system update by Amerigroup allows for it to be placed as any secondary diagnosis, which is anything two through what, Julie? How many can you put on there?
24.
Through 24. So I think best case is put that at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Z code need to be present on our plan of care orders? Julie, do you know that one?
So the plan of care that goes to the physician, if it's printing out through 24, it's gonna pull in there.
I think you'd put it on there in order for it to flow automatically over to the claim side, right? Just put it on your plan of care is going forward and just put it at the way end.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of out of time now. I appreciate all the comments. So I'm still confused. We were to put it as a second DX until Amerigroup gets it fixed. No, I would not do that.
No, because it will affect your star ratings.
Yeah, I would not put it as number two. But what they are doing is if it's placed in any secondary, when I say any secondary, that means two through 24, but don't put it in two through six because of the risk adjustments. So I put it at the end, the last diagnosis on your sheet.
They're going to do claim sweeps to find it in the other positions to pay that back out so that you, the provider, do not have to resubmit anything.
Correct. Yep. That's where I was just going to go was it will be, they're going to be identifying these is what it sounds like and then fixing them. So you may still receive denials, but you're actually submitting your claims accurately. I would not want to have a diagnosis in there that is non-clinical that could then impact your five-star rating. So I would put that at the end probably. Our software lets us add the DX code in any spot, even if not on the plan of care. Does it have to be on the plan of care? In that case, I would say no, I guess. If your software allows you to do it, it's probably just more, maybe more manual work then to have to put that in that specific spot every time.
It's non-clinical, so you wouldn't necessarily have to.
Right. So, okay. Well, thank you everyone for joining us on our call. Thank you, John and Danielle, and Julie and Donna from Amerigroup Iowa for joining us again. Our next call will be June 10th. Same time, same place. I feel like again the chat function worked, allowed everyone to voice comments and questions through that rather than opening up phone lines. So again, thanks for everyone for joining us, and have a good rest of your week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Be safe. Stay healthy.
Thank you all.